Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 3rd. Abortion opponents react to decision. Supreme Court decides not to block new Texas law banning most abortions, by Stuart Doreen. Local officials had expected reactions to the Supreme Court decision allowing a new Texas law that bans abortions once medical professionals can detect cardiac activity. The Associated Press reported that of the 54,000 abortions performed in 2020, around 45,000 occurred at 8 weeks of pregnancy or less. Some of those abortions still could have been legal under the new law if they occurred before cardiac activity was detected. Disappointing is how Midland County Democratic Party Chair Kathy Broderick described the Supreme Court ruling. She told the Reporter Telegram that she had a friend in school whose sister died of a backroom abortion. "It is a shame we are going back to those days. You don't stop abortion by making it illegal. You stop it by giving women affordable care." Viability of life. Judy Rouse, executive director of the Life Center, told the Reporter Telegram that the decision was part of the cooperation of science and law to prove the viability of life. According to Rouse, the Life Center will still advocate life-affirming abortion alternatives through counseling, parenting education, adoption education, and other life choices. "A person with a stressful pregnancy needs to understand their rights and the outcomes of their choices," Rouse stated. The Associated Press reported that courts have blocked other states from imposing similar restrictions. But Texas law differs significantly because it leaves enforcement up to private citizens through civil lawsuits instead of criminal prosecutors. "The key difference is the enforcement mechanism," the AP wrote. "The Texas law relies on citizens suing abortion providers over alleged violations. Other states sought to enforce their statutes through government actions, like criminal charges against physicians who provide abortions." Rouse said the new law does protect the women because they cannot be sued. "Her health is our priority," Rouse said. Heartbeat is a sign of living. Michael Bonsback of Pro-Life Midland offered the following when asked for a comment about the decision. "In 1973, the Supreme Court invented the right to an abortion, since the Constitution contains no such right. In his opinion of the court, Associate Justice Harry Blackmun wrote that, "We need not resolve the difficult question of when life begins. The judiciary, at this point in the development of man's knowledge, is not in a position to speculate as to the answer." While disingenuous at the time, it is even more so 50 years later, after the advances in medicine and ultrasound technology. With the passing of the Texas Heartbeat Act, and the Supreme Court's unwillingness to use its authority to block the law from taking effect, the state and federal government are effectively confirming that the detection of a heartbeat is clearly a sign of a living, growing child that has rights in the womb. An extreme new law. Planned Parenthood of Texas stated Thursday that the average one-way driving distance for pregnant Texans seeking an abortion will increase 20-fold, from 12 miles to 248 miles, according to research from the Guttmacher Institute. The organization also stated that abortion will remain an option for the few Texans who happen to know they're pregnant by 6 weeks or have the money and flexibility to secure the transportation, child care, lodging, and time off from work it takes to leave the state. "This will have a particularly severe impact on the communities that already bear the brunt of Texas' pre-existing web of medically unnecessary abortion restrictions, people of color, people with low incomes, young people, and people in rural areas without options, a news release stated. Lives will be saved. A case is still proceeding in the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, though the timing of future action is unclear, the AP reported. I celebrate the lives that will be saved by this legislation, said Bishop Michael J. Siss, Diocese of San Angelo. I hope it will continue to stand despite further legal challenges that may come. I believe the 1973 Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade, was a tragic mistake, because the most fundamental human right is the right to life. When we face the situation of an unplanned pregnancy, we are typically struggling to deal with two things, a crisis and a child. While the abortion industry would seek to resolve the situation by eliminating the child, we prefer to accept the child and assist with the circumstances of the crisis. Like Rouse recommended, pregnant women can call the Life Center. Siss stated in an email that hundreds of pregnancy and parenting support programs and adoption services in our state provide practical resources to women and families facing the challenges of unplanned pregnancies. I recommend that people facing an unplanned pregnancy contact the Texas Pregnancy Care Network at texaspregnancy.org or 877-345-7734 to find help in their local Texas community, Siss wrote. Doctor Gives View on COVID in Kids by Caitlin Ramdell. Dr. Debbie Reese, who has been a pediatrician in Midland for 38 years, provided perspective during Thursday's Midland Health Briefing on how COVID-19 is affecting children. Most children will experience mild symptoms similar to a cold, Reese said. She said, to her knowledge, no child in Midland has been hospitalized for COVID-19, and those who have had COVID-19 in the pediatric ward at Midland Memorial were hospitalized for other conditions. The greater risk, she said, is that children will contribute to the spread of the virus, especially as in-person learning and extracurricular activities have resumed. You should just assume that all children are going to be exposed to COVID, and they're going to be exposed in multiple settings, and they're going to spread the virus, Reese said. The most common symptoms Reese said she's seen in children are a sore throat, headache, fatigue, cough, and gastrointestinal issues. Children usually only need hydration and rest for treatment, she said. Children over the age of 12 with underlying risk factors may qualify for the Regeneron antibody treatment. Reese said there is no data to support using ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine in adults or children. She said while she has not seen any children who are using ivermectin, some parents have asked her to prescribe it, which she's declined to do. In rare cases, some children with COVID-19 may develop multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome. Reese said it occurs in less than 1% of cases, and the most common symptom is myocardial injury. However, data has suggested that almost all children who develop myocardial injuries recover, she said. For children returning to athletics after having COVID-19, Reese recommended they resume physical activity slowly and in stages. Reese also addressed whether she would recommend the vaccine for younger children, as Pfizer and Moderna have indicated they will likely seek approval for children under 12 sometime this fall. I really need to see the data before I fully commit to recommending the vaccine for children under 12, but I suspect that I will, she said. We need data on the proper dosing for children. Additionally, Reese said she's seen an increase in mental health conditions among children over the last year. She said she's seen more children and adolescents presenting with delayed social skills, as well as an increase in children with anxiety, depression, eating disorders, hypochondriasis, and self-harm behaviors. Try not to pass on your paranoia and anxiety to your children, she said. Take precautions, but go out and live your life and learn about something other than COVID. A new brand of football begins as Legacy has its home opener. Thank you to illustrator Norman Johnson, who helped the Reporter Telegram show a passing of the baton from Lee High School to Legacy High School. The Rebels, 1-0 for the season, will take on another set of Rebels from Tascosa High School in Amarillo in their 2021 home opener. The game is set for 7 p.m. Friday at Grande Communications Stadium. Cruise, interstate from Odessa to Georgia, has support by Caitlin Randall. Senator Ted Cruz visited Midland on Thursday to champion the Interstate 14 project, which would expand that highway across five states, beginning in Odessa and ending in Augusta, Georgia. The U.S. Senate unanimously approved the project last month as an amendment to the Biden administration's $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. Cruz co-wrote the amendment with Senator Raphael Warnock, Democrat, Georgia. I-14 currently goes through central Texas. The amendment would expand the congressional designation of the highway to begin in Odessa, cross through Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia before ending in Augusta. I-14 will take the incredible economic energy produced here in the Permian Basin and create an interstate that runs all the way to the Atlantic Ocean, Cruz said during a press conference hosted by the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance. He said the highway will connect critical military bases, run through rural areas that don't have other interstate connections, and produce jobs during construction. Cruz said he and Warnock worked together on the project because they had a shared interest in creating jobs in their respective states. I'm very proud that we were able to get a big legislative win for the Permian Basin in this time where Washington is so divided with partisan infighting, he said. The U.S. House is expected to vote on the infrastructure bill later this month. Cruz said he does not expect the House to make changes to the I-14 amendment. If the House passes the amendment, the I-14 expansion will be designated as the next interstate project and will receive funding from the state and federal government, Cruz said. He said it would take many years before construction would begin and be completed. Local and state. Seliger isn't focused on 22 campaign yet, by Stuart Doreen. While two candidates have currently announced they are running for Cal Seliger's seat in the Texas Senate, the Amarillo Republican has not yet said whether he is in or out for 2022. Seliger has represented the district, which currently includes Midland, Odessa, Big Spring, Amarillo, Canyon, and Pampa, since 2004. According to the Texas Senate website, he is seventh in seniority among current senators. When asked about re-election, Seliger's campaign manager offered the following in press statement to the Reporter Telegram. I am currently finishing the job I was elected to do before focusing on a campaign. Seliger faced Republican Party nomination challenges during the last two election cycles. In 2014, he collected 52.52% of the vote to defeat Midland's Mike Cannon. In 2018, he earned 50.41% of the vote to defeat Cannon and Victor Leal. Those announcing their candidacies for 2022 are Midland's Kevin Sparks and Big Spring's Stormy Bradley. Seliger currently serves as vice chair of the Texas Transportation Committee and sits on the committees for Health and Human Services, Natural Resources and Economic Development, Veteran Affairs and Border Security, and Nominations. He was one of the leading voices when it came to education, before a very public feud with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. At the beginning of the 2019 session, Patrick removed Seliger as chairman of the Higher Education Committee and took Seliger off the Committee on Education. He also was removed from the Budget Writing Finance Committee. Whether Seliger runs or not, one thing that will be worth watching especially for prospective candidates, is the impact of redistricting on District 31. It appears population growth will be greater in the southern portion of the district. There also is the possibility that the district may change based on growth elsewhere in the state. The Texas Ethics Commission shows Seliger has $479,600.10 cash on hand as of a report filed July 15th.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, September 3rd, 2021. County could fund hospital requests, get paid back. Health officials urge caution during holiday weekend. Ector County could turn every one federal dollar into two if they respond to the financial requests of both Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center for part of the $16.1 million that the county has gotten from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act. MCH CEO Russell Tippin, who asked the county for $7 million 2 weeks from the ARPA monies, said during Thursday's Zoom COVID news briefing that the county could get that $7 million and the $2.5 million requested by ORMC back through a FEMA program. Both Tippin and ORMC CEO Stacy Brown responded to questions about the COVID-related funds during the last news conference of the week, where it was revealed that 43 people have died at MCH of COVID since August 1st. Quote, there is a pathway for the county to turn every $1 into $2 by running it through FEMA, end quote, Tippin said. He said that FEMA reimbursement doesn't come immediately, but that he made the county judge and commissioners aware of the program when he requested the $7 million for ventilators, contract medical services, and funding to help incentivize staff. County officials during an August meeting indicated that the county has 90 days to 1 year to consider how to spend the $16.1 million. Commissioner Greg Simmons on Thursday said it is his understanding that the money could take more than a year to be returned to the county if it is run through the FEMA program, as Tippin and Brown have requested. He indicated that he had not seen anything in writing about the FEMA program. When asked why not fund the hospital request now, if the money was coming back in a year, he said multiple agencies are seeking part of the county's $16.1 million. Tippin and Brown agreed that the need is critical for the funding, now with COVID surging across the country and in Ector County. Quote, we have asked that they would consider our request, and they are aware of how it is available, end quote, Tippin said. Brown agreed that there is an urgent need now. Quote, we respectfully request that they give it now, and we know the funding they have received is eligible for the use of that money and could help our community and our hospitals, end quote, Brown said, adding that the request should be funded as the county knows, quote, that down the road they could get that money back, end quote. All health officials reminded Odessans that the Labor Day holiday essentially kicks off the holiday season and to be careful with gatherings. MCH had 102 total COVID patients in-house, with 38 in critical care and 34 on ventilators. Of the vented patients, 28 were not vaccinated. The age range of patients was 16 to 88. ORMC had 32 COVID patients, with 22 in ICU and 9 of those ventilated. The age range was 25 to 94, and about 46% of the patients were 60 and below. Tippin said in addition to COVID that MCH had a, quote, bumper crop, end quote, in labor and delivery, with about 40 moms pushing the MCH patient census to 300 Thursday. He said since Monday that 15 people have died of COVID-related illness at MCH. He said the critical care number at MCH has gone down since August 1st, but that much of that is due to deaths. Both Brown and Tippin indicated that most patients at both hospitals were from Ector County. Odessa Regional Medical Center Regional Chief of Staff, Dr. Rohith Saravanan, said there are signs of hope with Ector County's vaccination rate for those who are eligible finally going over 50% for those who have received at least one dose. Quote, hopeful is the best word. We are starting to see more of the community get vaccinated. But on the other hand, it is going through our community so fast, end quote, he said of the recent COVID surge. He praised outpatient therapy and said it prevents hospitalization. Quote, the UK had a sharp rise, and once it peaked, it started to fall quickly. Have we peaked? We don't know the answer to that, end quote, Sarah Vannon said. Area leaders laud Cruz's I-14 efforts. Senator in the basin to detail bipartisan highway effort. It wasn't officially declared Senator Ted Cruz Day in the Permian Basin, but political leaders in Odessa and Midland on Thursday cheered the Texas senator for his role in resuscitating efforts to construct a new Interstate 14 corridor that would stretch from Texas to Georgia. Cruz and Georgia Democrat Raphael Warnock recently joined forces to submit an amendment that would extend the proposed corridor to Odessa. Their amendment received unanimous bipartisan support from the Senate. Quote, we're here to honor Senator Ted Cruz, who has never been the poster child for bipartisan relationships, end quote, joked MOTRAN President James Beauchamp during a press conference held at the Permian Basin Petroleum Museum. Quote, this is really damn amazing, end quote. Cruz, who laughed at the good-natured ribbing, admitted that he often doesn't see eye-to-eye with his political counterparts. But he added, when Democrats and Republicans can come together, quote, great things can get done, end quote. Cruz said he and Warnock joined forces because they both realized the corridor can create more jobs and boost the economies of both states. If the proposed infrastructure bill is eventually approved, the corridor expansion would connect the Permian Basin to U.S. military installations and seaports, including the port of Savannah, which is the third largest port in the U.S., Cruz said. The corridor would also provide a more direct access for oil and other energy industries, Cruz added. Quote, I'm extremely pleased that the senator stepped up and helped us achieve this goal, end quote, said Odessa City Councilman Tom Sprawls, who attended Thursday's press conference. Permian Basin Petroleum Association President Ben Shepard added, quote, today we're here to celebrate. The days of the oil business is far from over, end quote. Cruz and Beauchamp cautioned that the proposed expansion of Interstate 14 is still many years off. In addition to needing final approval from the Senate and the House, funding will also need to be acquired. Beauchamp said it's still not known how much the entire project will cost to complete. But he noted that much of the infrastructure is already in place for the Permian Basin portion. Quote, if you were to build a new interstate from scratch, it would cost $10 to $10.5 billion per mile, Beauchamp said. Because the current infrastructure is already in place, hundreds of millions of dollars will be saved in the Permian Basin. Such a project will require a combination of federal and state dollars, Beauchamp and Cruz said. The proposed Interstate 14 expansion would now extend through five states, including Texas, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Cruz said he has visited Odessa and Midland many times during the past couple years to speak with community leaders about the feasibility of including the Permian Basin in the proposed corridor expansion. He called the Odessa-Midland area one of the most entrepreneurial areas in Texas, trailing only Houston. Cruz said he committed himself to the effort, even after community leaders told him their dreams of the corridor were on, quote, life support, end quote. Quote, I told them almost dead is not dead, end quote, said Cruz, quoting from a scene in the movie Princess Bride. A jovial Cruz then reenacted about 5 minutes from the movie to the delight of those in attendance. Travis teacher makes science fun. Travis Elementary School science lab teacher Sarah Hawkins has an infectious sense of fun, wonder, and curiosity that translates to her students. Recently, she was named the Region 18 Teacher of the Year and was also the Ector County ISD Elementary Teacher of the Year. Hawkins has been teaching for 8 years, three with ECISD, at Travis Elementary. She is now a finalist for the State Teacher of the Year Award, a contest coordinated each year by the Texas Association of School Administrators. A ceremony for the region honor will be held at 9:45 a.m. October 20th at the Region 18 Education Service Center. Hawkins and her husband, Scott, are both retired from the U.S. Navy. They have 5 daughters and 3 grandchildren. Quote, I'm so very proud of Ms. Hawkins, end quote, Travis Principal Amy Russell said. Quote, she was so honored and humbled to receive not only the Travis Teacher of the Year, but then ECISD's Teacher of the Year. When she found out that she needed to fill out paperwork and essays to be considered the Region 18 Teacher of the Year, she told me, I can't do that. I'm not worthy at all to be in the running. I sternly replied to her, come on, soldier, in reference to her military background. You have to step up and do this for teachers. You are not only telling your story, but you are telling the story of thousands of teachers and their incredibly difficult journey they have had to endure this last epidemic year. You are their face and you are their voice. You're telling Travis's story, the district's story, and the world's story. Well, in like fashion, she stepped up and completed the process of telling their story through her eyes and was named Region 18 Teacher of the Year. I'm one proud principal, end quote. Hawkins has been teaching for 9 years, including a stint with an American school in Italy. When she and her family moved back to the States, she substitute taught in Virginia, then went to Montana. Quote, I worked at the Boys and Girls Home for Troubled Youth. I helped them with their schoolwork there, end quote, Hawkins said. When she got to Saginaw, she worked as a pharmacy technician because there were no openings. Born in Frankfurt, Germany, her family lived there for 7 years, which is the longest she has ever lived anywhere. Her parents are from Montana. Her father drew her into the military, but Hawkins knew she wanted to be a teacher from the time she was in third grade. Quote, when my older sister would babysit, the kids would generally gravitate towards me, and we'd play games, and we'd do all that fun stuff, and I really enjoyed it. It was fun creating new things for them to do just to keep them busy, end quote, Hawkins said. For example, she'd take the children into the backyard and have them make a map of it. Quote, I found everywhere that I've been, I was somehow able to help somebody in learning something that they didn't know, and so I really, really enjoyed that, end quote, she added. One advantage Hawkins has is that she tries her ideas out on her daughters and grandchildren. They call Hawkins, quote, extreme, end quote, because she does things like wear the planets around her head in the correct order when she was teaching a unit on that subject. When they did a lesson on weathering, erosion, and deposition, they sang and danced. Quote, we got some stuff off the internet, and we were doing all sorts of stuff to go with it. I really think science labs are extremely important in elementary school. Yes, in middle school and high school. But we have that fifth grade test. Sometimes they don't get what they need in third and fourth grade before that test, end quote, Hawkins said. If she can give them hands-on experience to help them remember, that gives her students a leg up. As a child, Hawkins said she was a visual learner and would take things apart and put them back together. The lesson for a recent Wednesday was tools. She gave them all the tools and asked students to identify them. Hawkins said she lets the students experiment and play, especially the English as second language students, because they don't know what it's called in English. Quote, and if they can't grasp that now, by the time they go to take the test, it's just not going to happen, end quote, Hawkins said. She found out about the Region 18 award when she was waiting for her youngest daughter to get out of surgery. Quote, so I got online, and I'm watching the school, and they popped up my name. And I was like, oh, I was so embarrassed, but I just do my thing, end quote. At the same time, learning of the award helped her relax a little. Quote, it made me feel better about her surgery. I just don't know how. I don't know why, but it did, end quote, Hawkins said. Her daughter, who works as a coach's aide at Travis, was with her and recorded Hawkins' reaction. She added that she has enjoyed working for ECISD. Quote, and I've really loved Travis, end quote, Hawkins said. She added that she's one of the last elementary science lab teachers. Quote, I'm super happy that they still have this position here because I pull out everything. There's a bug on the floor, and I got about 10 kids help me pick it up so we can take it outside, end quote, she said. Quote, we look at it, we study a little bit, and then we take it outside when before it'd be the whole bunch of just screaming, end quote. Students bring her bugs, and she brings animals from home when they have a variety of pets. They have a house chicken named House Chicken, snakes, and other creatures that the children would just see on TV. Quote, and so it's not real to them until it's real, end quote, Hawkins said. Quick hits. Black and white ball. Odessa Arts will honor the 2021 Friends of the Arts recipients. Betsy and Buzz Hurt, Sandra and Toby Eoff, and Michael Marrero during the Black and White Ball at 6:30 p.m. September 17th at the Downtown Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Tickets and sponsorships are available at odessaarts.org. From Staff Reports. Adult Education and Family Literacy Week. The Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center celebrates the annual Adult Education and Family Literacy Week. September 19th through 25th, marks the annual Adult Education and Family Literacy Week, hosted by the National Coalition for Literacy. This week exists to remind us all that reading, writing, and basic math remain an elusive target for 43 million adults nationwide, including as many as 25% of the adults in our community. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center in Midland is part of a national network of organizations that work to change lives and communities through the power of adult literacy. According to Pro Literacy, the leading membership organization advancing the cause of adult literacy and basic education in the nation, more than 43 million adults in the U.S. cannot read, write, or do basic math above a third grade level. Pro Literacy provides more than 1,000 adult education and literacy programs, including PBALC, with tools to educate adult learners and help them meet the demands of today's workforce. Quote, here at home, in our own community, we know that between 15 to 24% of adults do not have their high school diploma, and an additional 34 to 45% speak a language other than English at home, end quote. Alba Austin, executive director of PBALC, said, quote, literacy helps families to be healthier and safer and provides opportunities for adults to support themselves through work, contributing ultimately to the economic growth of our region and our country. Here at PBALC, we also know that teaching parents and adults reading strategies increases a child's language and literacy outcomes, end quote. Quote, low literacy costs the nation more than $2.2 trillion each year in lost productivity, as well as an additional $1 to $2 billion in health and safety issues, end quote. Kevin Morgan, president and CEO of Pro Literacy, said, quote, every dollar spent on adult literacy and education provides returns to the country through higher employment, added tax revenues, reduced welfare payments, and less crime, end quote. In recognition of Adult Education and Family Literacy Week, PBALC has planned various activities, including the Readathon fundraiser and silent auction. For more information, visit pbalc.org. Permian Basin Opera brings husband and wife duo to Midland. The Permian Basin Opera will be bringing the critically acclaimed husband and wife duo of Kirsten and Keith Chambers to Midland's Yucca Theater on September 23rd and 25th to perform A Life Made in Music, the love story of Kirsten and Keith Chambers. Kirsten is an internationally acclaimed soprano who will take the stage with music conducted by her husband Keith Chambers to tell their tale of friendship, heartache, and happily ever after. The pair met in Texas and have navigated the performing and teaching worlds of opera before moving to New York City. Kirsten is most known for her portrayal of the title role of Salome, which she has sung at the Metropolitan Opera, Opera Hong Kong, and the Florida Grand Opera. Keith has conducted over 150 performances of over 50 different operas for companies including the Dallas Opera, Indianapolis Opera, Shreveport Opera, Asheville Lyric Opera, the Amarillo Opera, and much more. He has served as cover and or assistant conductor for over 40 different operas and has assisted noted conductors Emmanuel Vallome, Patrick Summers, Willie Anthony Waters, and Ricardo Frieza, among others. He is currently the principal guest conductor of Manhattan Opera Studio and the founder and artistic director of New Amsterdam Opera. The concerts will include a performance of the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland's ballet Folklorico. Accompanying musicians include the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, String Quartet, and Luann Lane. Tickets can be purchased online at the Permian Basin Opera's website, www.mypbo.org. United Family raises $500,000. The United Family has raised $500,000 for 28 United Way chapters, including the United Way of Midland, through its 30th annual Jackie Pierce Charity Classic, JPCC, golf tournament, in a press release provided by the United Family. The tournament took place August 29th through 30th. Checks were presented to the 28 United Way chapters at a recognition event on August 29th. The JPCC golf tournament was started back in 1991. Since then, the tournament has raised more than $5 million for nonprofit organizations across the United Family's trade areas. Of the $500,000 total, the United Way of Odessa received $20,392, and the United Way of Midland received $23,183. The tournament has grown over the last 30 years and includes about 500 golfers. The tournament is named in honor of the longtime produce director for United Supermarkets, Jackie Pierce, who guided the annual golf tournament from its start. Local news roundup. Police respond to subject with firearm. The Odessa Police Department reportedly responded to a gas station in reference to a person with a firearm. The reported incident happened at 5:47 a.m. Thursday at the Quick Track located at 317 North Dixie Boulevard, an OPD press release detailed. Officers reportedly found a subject that had fallen asleep behind the wheel of his vehicle in the parking lot. As officers arrived, they found him to be armed with a weapon. OPD later clarified that to be a firearm. Officers used less lethal tactics to get him out of the vehicle, the press release stated. Once the subject was detained, he was given medical treatment. Marshals take suspect into custody. According to CBS 7, a suspect who escaped custody while being treated at Midland Medical Center Hospital has now been captured, according to the U.S. Marshals Service. The suspect was identified as 30-year-old Victor Antonio Coca. CBS 7 reported that Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said a man arrested in a pursuit was taken to Medical Center Hospital for treatment. During the treatment, his handcuffs were taken off and he managed to escape. Director of Communications Mike Adkins said the administration complex and Austin Elementary went into lockdown for about 45 minutes as a precaution. DPS encourages safety for Labor Day weekend. The Texas Department of Public Safety encourages everyone to drive safely as they celebrate the unofficial end of summer during the long Labor Day weekend, a press release detailed. The Texas Highway Patrol will reportedly be increasing enforcement from September 3rd through September 6th, looking for people not wearing their seatbelts, speeders, people driving while intoxicated, and drivers who fail to follow the state's Move Over, Slow Down law, among other traffic violations. Quote, DPS is reminding all drivers that safety always comes first, end quote, DPS Director Stephen McGraw stated in the press release. Quote, while long weekends are a time to get out and enjoy, we all need to do our part to keep roads safe, and that is why troopers will be out ensuring everyone is following the traffic laws, end quote. During the 2020 Labor Day holiday, troopers issued 71,544 citations and warnings. This included 9,239 citations for speeding, 1,088 seatbelt and child safety restraint citations, 1,419 citations for no insurance, and 534 warnings and citations for move-over, slow-down violations. DPS enforcement efforts also resulted in 402 DWI arrests, 802 felony arrests, and 200 fugitive arrests. Operation Crash Awareness and Reduction Effort will run simultaneously. Operation CARE is an initiative among police agencies across the country, including the Texas Highway Patrol. It increases enforcement efforts during designated periods throughout the year, including holidays like Labor Day. Drivers are encouraged to follow these tips during the Labor Day holiday. Don't drink and drive. Make alternate plans if you're consuming alcohol. Move over or slow down for police, fire, EMS, TxDOT vehicles, and tow trucks stopped on the side of the road with emergency lights activated. Show the same courtesy to fellow drivers who are stopped on the side of the road. So far in 2021, there have been 8,950 violations. Buckle up everyone in the vehicle. It's the law. Slow down, especially in bad weather, heavy traffic, unfamiliar areas, or construction zones. Eliminate distractions. Eliminate distractions while driving, including the use of mobile devices. Texas law prohibits the use of portable wireless devices to read, write, or send an electronic message unless the vehicle is stopped. If you're using a navigation device or app, have a passenger operate it so you can keep your eyes on the road. Drive defensively, as holiday travel can present additional challenges. Know your route before beginning your trip. Don't drive fatigued. Allow plenty of time to reach your destination. On multi-lane roads, use the left lane for passing only. Not only is it courteous driving and avoids impending traffic, Texas law requires slower traffic to keep to the right and to use the left lane for passing only when posted. If you can steer it, clear it. If you're involved in a non-injury crash and your vehicle can be moved, clear the traffic lanes to minimize traffic impact. Leaving vehicles in a traffic lane increases traffic congestion and leaves those involved with an increased risk of harm or a secondary wreck. On some highways, if you don't move your vehicle when it's safe to do so, you're violating the law. Don't cut in front of large trucks and try not to brake quickly in front of them, if possible. They can't maneuver as easily as passenger vehicles and pickup trucks. Check your vehicle to make sure it's properly maintained and always ensure your cargo is secure. Report road hazards or anything suspicious to the nearest law enforcement agency. Monitor weather and road conditions wherever you're traveling. For road conditions and closures in Texas, visit Drive Texas. Youth and animals shine during livestock events. The chickens will cluck, the pigs oink oink, and the cows will moo as they strut their stuff during the 45th Permian Basin Fair and Expo's livestock events, scheduled for Saturday and Sunday. If the judges find the livestock healthy and looking good, the young owners of these animals will walk away with scholarship dollars, awards, and the knowledge of a job well done, said Bob Williams, a longtime executive board member who oversees various fair events. Quote, the main goal of the livestock contests is to teach kids about self-discipline and responsibility, end quote, Williams said. Quote, they learn that it's their responsibility to take care of the animals. Quote, they have to get up early every day, even on mornings when they may not want to, and feed them. And after school, they need to feed them again and clean up after them, end quote. The fair's livestock events are for youths age 8 through 19 and features various livestock categories, including rabbits, poultry, swine, goats, cattle, and lambs. Most livestock events are held on Saturdays and Sundays so that youths don't have to miss any school days, Williams said. For a complete schedule of event days and times, visit tinyurl.com/37BM4PBM. Participating youths do more than just feed and keep them clean, Williams said. They need to make sure their animals are healthy, eat the proper amount of food, and are well-behaved. Livestock judges use a variety of criteria to judge animals, including the animal's overall appearance and build, the quality of an animal's offspring if they are being raised for breeding purposes, Williams said. Youths and animals are also judged on showmanship. Judges observe how owner and animal interact, how well the owner presents their livestock, and how courteous they behave toward other people and animals. Judges also quiz owners about how they raise their livestock. Quote, it's a good thing they can use for anything in life, end quote, Williams said. April Osteen Simons featured at OCFC's Flourish Women's Event. Christian Faith Center welcomes guest minister April Osteen Simons at 7 p.m. September 10th for their Flourish Women's Event. April Osteen Simons is a motivational speaker, author, and hope coach who delivers her inspirational, funny, faith-focused messages to audiences around the world, a news release said. She hosts a weekly podcast called Better and a YouTube series called House of Hope. Her new book, Better Than Ever, will be released this month. Ticket price is $15 per person. To purchase tickets for this event, go to ocfc.org/flourish. Odessa Christian Faith Center is located at 9000 Andrews Highway in Odessa. Spanish interpretation will be available during this event. For more information regarding this event, call 432-368-7714 and ask for Christy Lofton. Email us at ocfc@ocfc.org or visit our website at ocfc.org. Death Notices. Sandra K. Foote, Odessa. Sandra K. Foote, 66, died Wednesday, September 1st, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Kenneth Wayne Foote, Odessa. Kenneth Wayne Foote, 73, died Friday, August 27th, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Other Voices, The Idle American. Don Newberry is a speaker in the Metroplex. Doctors have a word to say. Most hunters are so gung-ho, they'll hunt anything that'll run from them. Similarly, TV news folks salivate at the prospect of all-out chases to pluck credible opinions on controversial topics. This was the case recently when a neurosurgeon was questioned by a Dallas TV reporter. The query concerned the ongoing debate about whether a helmet law should be enacted for motorcyclists. His answer was, a no-brainer. Explaining that many serious injuries incurred by riders without helmets would otherwise be minor, Dr. Jeremy Denning mentioned that some physicians have coined a word that reveals their opinions. They call them donor cycles, Dr. Denning said. End of interview. Meanwhile, operators of four-wheel vehicles often give law enforcement personnel reasons to coin names for certain drivers, names that are unfit to appear in a family newspaper. James Davis, who was playing in big bands before they invented instruments that plug in, has to smile when he remembers a traffic pullover several decades ago. Decked out in a tuxedo, common evening apparel for him, he was ready to tickle ivories at a country club gala. However, he was running a bit late, and his foot was a bit heavy. Soon the red light and siren on the vehicle behind him made stopping his best choice. The traffic officer rattled off his obligatory lecture, then backed off with just a warning. Noticing Davis' spiffy tuxedo, the officer barked, "If you weren't late for your own wedding, I'd throw the book at you." Bill Sanders, a federal government retiree, has reason to smile about a similar offense recently. His wife, Carolyn, chuckled as her hubby was red-lighted to the roadside. As the officer strode toward the Sanders car, she hoped he would make the usual inquiry, the one to determine if the driver, has a good reason for speeding. "I'm late getting to a Crime Stoppers meeting," Bill answered sheepishly. The truth, of course, is hard to beat. His speed wasn't that much over the limit, and he was indeed en route to the aforementioned meeting. Later, he served as county president for Crime Stoppers. When Sanders began his career in government service, his assignment was in Austin. It was during the presidency of Lyndon B. Johnson. One day, the Johnsons were in town, and Lady Bird was planning a barbecue picnic at the ranch. She decided on a Yellow Rose of Texas theme. Sanders' supervisor instructed him to get a dozen garbage cans painted for the event. "The cans are to be painted exactly as Mrs. Johnson instructed," he said. "They are to be yellow rose yellow, not lemon yellow, not mustard yellow, and not sunrise yellow," the boss warned. For emphasis, he repeated the mandate, asking Bill if he fully understood. Bill said he did. The ever-resourceful Sanders gave serious thought to the assignment. He feared grave consequences if the painted cans were a hue or two off. So his first stop was at a floral shop. He purchased a bouquet of yellow roses before proceeding to the paint shop. "Paint these cans the same shade as these here roses," Sanders said. "Make sure it's not lemon yellow, mustard yellow, or sunrise yellow." He asked the painters if they understood. They said they did. The eager-to-please painters yellowed up the cans just right, and Bill got it right for almost 40 years in government service. I'll end this week's piece by dredging up the old chauvinistic yarn about a traffic officer who finally prevailed after a lengthy high-speed chase. The veteran DPS guy thought he had heard them all, but this offender offered a new excuse. "Officer, I tried hard to outrun you for good reason," the driver said. "A week ago, my wife ran off with a trooper, and I figured he was trying to bring her back." Starting Small, IDEA Has Big Plans, by Ruth Campbell. IDEA Yukon has opened in Parks Bell Ranch in Odessa, and the public charter school is already in full swing. The two-story campus currently has students in kindergarten through second grade and sixth grade. Bethany Everett, principal of IDEA Academy Yukon, said they will add a grade per year. Everett said they employ direct instruction, which includes a lot of phonemic awareness. "We actually meet them at their levels, so we test them before they get to school, and they start where they're at so that we can close those foundational gaps and get them to where they should be, which is completing the first grade program by the end of the year," Everett said. IDEA Yukon College Prep will have 6th through 12th grade. The principal is Greg Gutierrez. "Students or scholars sit college ready, giving their full attention to the lesson, the teacher, or the student speaking. Everett offers immediate feedback or real-time coaching to classroom teachers. We don't wait until the lesson is over or until a week goes by or semester goes by to give teachers feedback. It's like sports, right? Great athletes get feedback right in the moment, and then they implement it right away. And so you saw Bethany give quick feedback to implement part of our system for behavior management. That's something you'll see constantly, and Bethany and Craig are both excellent at it. Executive Director of IDEA Permian Basin Bethany Solis said, "The school has a positive behavior point system where when all the students are answering in response and or college ready during their lessons, they get a point," Everett said. Solis said it's a friendly competition between the teacher and the student. Everett said the goal is for students to win. Solis said students love it. So, for example, if there are silly things like fantastic, you pull out your spray bottle, you go, "You're fantastic," Everett said. Teachers undergo 2 weeks of professional development prior to school opening. We do have new to IDEA Institute where they learn basic teacher moves that are successful, and then campus-specific PD where we prep them for culture camp. Kids go through culture camp, which is the first 3 days, where they learn how to sit like a college-ready scholar, how to walk in the halls, bubbles and wings, things like that they're seeing, Everett said. She added that IDEA has high expectations for its students. Because when we have high expectations and that structure, they're able to flourish with the instruction that they're given, Everett said. There are minimal distractions to keep them from closing those gaps that we know we need to close. Everett said they are trying to teach scholars how to walk properly in a hallway, how to treat others kindly, and how to have discussions with each other, for example. Scholars also are taught to speak in complete sentences. "I think we're just trying to set them up for success so that they are able to be successful with our expectations. So if we didn't teach them these expectations, they would come in and just walk all over the hallways and just shout out during class, which would be much harder to get them focused and doing the incredible gains that we want them and they need to accomplish so they can be reading at grade level," Everett said. Solis noted that children want to behave well, and when they don't, it's usually because they just haven't been taught or expected to. And so we believe that any child can learn at really, really high levels. But in order to do that, we've only got a short amount of time with them every day. We're going to maximize every minute to pull out their absolute potential that we know every one of them has, Solis said. It's part of the magic of IDEA. It's part of why our schools typically outperform others, because we have figured out some ways to pull out the absolute best academically from our students that could happen in any other school because it's the same kids, Solis added. She added that the majority of the scholars are low income, but still very socioeconomically diverse. Solis said more than 80% of the students there live more than 5 miles from campus, and they come from all over the city of Odessa. IDEA was going to partner with Ector County ISD. It didn't work out, but Solis said it could happen in the future. In the last minute, our two boards weren't able to come to consensus on a couple of final negotiations. Part of that partnership was going to include busing, so Solis said they were able to get some from other IDEA regions. She noted that a misconception about IDEA is that you can't attend if you have any learning disabilities or special education needs. "We serve students with very profound needs and are really proud to do so." Now that the campus is open, Gutierrez said he is thrilled. "Just positive energy. Of course, there are challenges, but it's just wonderful to be here and working with families and finding the best solutions for our scholars," Gutierrez said. Everyone agreed. "It's just exciting to see the kids every morning. They're super happy to be here. And when they leave, they're saying goodbye to our teachers. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm just really excited and pumped for all the growth we're going to make for our scholars, but also that they're having fun and they really feel like this is their second home, so I'm excited for that, Everett said. Altogether, the campuses have a little under 500 students. There are about 30 students per class and two adults in classrooms with younger scholars and teachers, in classrooms with older scholars, are trying to manage large classrooms successfully. And what's great about larger classrooms is that we've got more kids benefiting from a great teacher, Everett said. But yeah, you have to be able to equip that teacher to handle those large numbers, which we've, for the most part, been really successful at. Gutierrez said they have a school counselor and a social worker on campus. The campus will offer Spanish and French. Gutierrez is fluent in French. For students that want to learn another foreign language, we'll connect them with virtual AP classes, things like that to make sure that they still have options, even if we're not offering a full class. They have after-school programs on a sports and non-sports track. That's how we're launching because we're small right now. But as we grow, absolutely we're looking at more sports after school. This year, we're starting with soccer and basketball, and then going on in our non-sports track, we're looking at, like, STEM club. And one of the teachers wants to start student council, Gutierrez said. Sola said they listen to students about what they want. There's one idea school that offers, like, over 20 UIL sports, because that's what that campus and that community was really looking for. And then you'll see others with a huge STEM focus or art focus. You'll see some schools with mariachi groups or orchestras. The benefit of starting small and growing is we get to learn what our kids are most passionate about and then go in those directions, Solis said.
Mom is convinced nighttime sounds have a name. Dear Dr. Roach, I need help with my mother's question. She's 86. She reports hearing glass breaking or being smashed. It's so loud that it wakes her out of her sleep. She looks around and never is there a glass broken. She says it's also a loud crashing noise, like something slamming up against a door. This only happens at night in her sleep. She states that it only happens a couple times a year for many years. I've told her it's a dream or semi-dream state. She's convinced that there is a specific medical name and explanation for her experience. Her name is Sarah. Answer. Sarah, you were right. This is a known condition, and it is called a hypnopompic hallucination. For some people, these hallucinations are visual. For others, they are auditory. They can occasionally be tactile. Your daughter is also right in that it is very like a dream state, except that it happens only as you wake up. Often, it can be accompanied by sleep paralysis, an inability to move anything for a minute or two, which can be frightening. About 20% of the population can get this on a rare basis, but people with narcolepsy can get it very often. Since you are having them rarely, it is not something you need to worry about. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Wife unsettled at mother-in-law's frequent presence at home. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, I have been married for nearly 10 years. I guess I never noticed this while we were dating, but as our marriage has progressed, it's becoming increasingly apparent he's a complete mama's boy. He calls her constantly with updates, some I'd prefer she didn't know about, and invites her over frequently without consulting me. I've tried to gently express that sometimes it's a bit much, especially because he tells her things before he tells me. But he becomes defensive and accuses me of not liking her. It doesn't help that his father died 5 years ago, leaving her a rather young widow. I feel his protectiveness over her has accelerated because he fears she will be alone too much. My mother-in-law is a nice person, but I need my space. After work, I want to come home and spend time with my husband and children, without another person always being there. It has reached the point that I'm starting to resent her, and that's not fair to her. Please help. Crowded in Wisconsin. Dear Crowded, you're right. It isn't fair that you're aiming your resentment at your mother-in-law. The person who should be the target of your displeasure is your husband. I assume you have already tried communicating to him the legitimate complaints you listed in your letter. It may require help from a marriage counselor to get him to understand that you don't dislike his mother, but that certain things between a husband and wife should remain private. Yes, she is his mother, but common courtesy would dictate that the two of you agree about how often you will come home after a hard day's work to find her sitting there. Dear Abby, I've been married for more than 30 years. Our marriage isn't wonderful, but it's better than most. I love my husband, but I am not sure I'm in love with him. I have had an off-and-on friendship with my ex-boyfriend for the past 40 years. We're not intimate, just friends. We meet occasionally for coffee or dinner to talk. He is divorced. Logically, I know he isn't the right one, but my heart still feels strongly for him. This is in spite of a 20-year gap when we didn't see or hear from each other. I ran into him 3 years ago and we started talking, but a year went by before we saw each other again. No matter how hard I try, I can't seem to get him out of my heart. He says he will always love me, but I don't think he means in love. He has been with someone for 5 years whom he cares for and is thinking of marrying because he is getting older and wants the companionship. He claims not to be in love with her. I hurt when I don't hear from him regularly. My heart aches when I think about not having him in my life at all. How do I get over him? Emotionally invested. Dear invested, wake up and accept that if your ex-boyfriend were in love with you, he would have demonstrated it by now. He appears to be very comfortable with the companion he's involved with, regardless of the fact he says he isn't in love with her either. A surefire way to get over this lingering crush would be to start counting the many blessings you have with your husband of 30 years. And if there is something missing, begin a dialogue and work to improve it.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.